I'm Nikki and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
It's a blessing and a privilege to be in this chair. It's a blessing and a privilege to be asked. I thank you for those words, Paul. It's kind of hit me right here. And before I come in, I've had a nice conversation with God to try and centre me. I can feel the adrenaline coursing through my veins and I can feel my heart like it wants to pump out my chest. But I know it's not about me today. God will have me say what he needs me to say. I got a bit cocky because I thought it was only a 20 minute kind of meeting and there was a share back, and apparently that's not the case. So the itinerary has changed a little bit, so then that kind of comes up for me again, and I've just sat and in my head all I can hear God say is be still and know that I am. And that's been the case for me in the last 3 years. I'm very blessed to know a few people in the room who I consider to be my family. My family who have been there at my dark times, at my light times, at my kind of in the middle times, and I feel very eternally blessed for that, for the people that have been placed on my path. And I'm very much of the view today that nothing happens by accident. Nothing happens by accident. I'll just give you a little bit about me. You know, I first came in 2004 and I went into another fellowship and I was in a day treatment centre. And there was lots of like inner child work and all of that, and I was the clan because I just wanted to go in and for you to tell me that maybe I could drink a bit differently or I could use a bit differently. I know what my master is. Alcohol is my master. It takes me on to other things, but I will go to any lengths for alcohol. Absolutely, I didn't go to them lengths for cocaine or weed or pills. I like them things. Don't get me wrong. When they numb me out and take me away from reality and what's really going on. But alcohol was the one that was there, that was my husband, my lover, my everything, my absolutely everything, was above my children, above my family, above my friends, above my job, above anything. And I was in this day treatment centre, and they used to breathalyse you and all that, and I ended up there because I'd something in my gut. I'm very aware today, if I'm going with my nuts, saying it's wrong, if I go with my gut, saying it's right. And I was very aware for a very long time that something was wrong, but I didn't know. So what I would do, I would, towards the end, I had a child in my using who I used while I was pregnant. And I remember when I got pregnant, this child was going to change my life. This was going to be the thing that changed my life. I'm very open to sharing anything today. I've been blessed to be told I need to be transparent. Don't hold nothing to yourself, Nick. You need to share that stuff. Not everything I will share in a room full of people because I don't have to. I've got a little circle that I go to with my most intimate stuff, but I will tell you generally what kind of goes on for me, because the hope is that maybe someone's suffering that right now and you don't need to. I got pregnant and I had this child. And that's my oldest boy who's here with me today. And I remember at 3 months old, him being on the seat with all the pillars around him, and I picked up the pillar because in my head I was like, you were supposed to change this and he didn't. And I wanted to put the pillar over his face because he just hadn't changed anything for me. It was just getting worse. I bounced from dodgy relationship to dodgy relationship because that was going to change me. I moved from house to house and different jobs and different friends and all of that, and I still was walking around with this horrible feeling of impending doom all the time until I took that first drink and then I could breathe. Towards the end of my using and my drinking, I was someone that had to have something down the side of the bed to get out of bed because I couldn't do a day. I couldn't get my son ready for school, and I still believe that I'm a good mum because he's got a clean uniform and he's got a dinner on the table. I'm not there mentally, emotionally, in any shape or form for that child, but I believe that because he comes home and there's a dinner on the table, it's all right. The fact that I would put him in bed and go off for 3 days, not knowing if I come back, is he still going to be in his bed, or who I've left him with, and all of that, none of that occurred to me. So, and I don't even say I was in denial, I was deluded, absolutely delusional. Partner I was with went into treatment, came out of treatment, and I remember he come home and I had my gear, my weed, my pills and my drink all on the table, and he's sitting there and he's going to me, you've got to get yourself sorted out. And me looking at him and went, what's the other option? And he went, you get out. And I went, all right, I'll go then. And I packed my bags and I left. And I left with my son and I went and moved him in a flat. And it was absolute chaos. Moved in with my sister for a little while because she used and drank like me. Both got two little kids, trying to be parents. Couldn't even look after ourselves. Didn't matter, you know, it was a toss-up between the electric, something to eat and a drink or a sniff, you know, all of that kind of juggle, where we'll just put a tenner on the electric because then we've got more money for a drink and da-da-da. Just exhausting, absolutely exhausting. And what happened for me was, there was, in the early days, when I worked in the city, when it, you know, Bill talks about in the book about he'd arrived and all that, I had all that. At the end, it was absolutely pitiful. Sitting in a flat on your own, just using and drinking and crying, why is this happening to me again? You know, lack of power. Tomorrow will be different. I'd get up every morning and go, please God, not today. Please God, not today. And then I'm reaching down the side of the bed and I'm off and I'm running again. Heartbreaking obsession that one day I'll be able to drink like other people. Today would be different, Nick. It won't be like yesterday. All of that stuff. Constant. Chase. No fulfillment. No sustainment. Nothing. Empty. It was like filling an empty bucket. You know, with a massive hole in it. As I'm putting it in, it's just all pissing out. It's just all going. And I went into this treatment centre, as I say, day treatment, because I weren't going to leave my child, because I'm a good mum, I need to be at home. Don't put me in residential, I can't leave him. And what I did, I'd been there for about a month, and there's a lovely lady who, we know each other from back in the day. Thankfully, when we was both on it back in the day in Hackney, we never crossed paths, because I think we would have ended up killing each other. But we drank and used with the same people, just at separate times. And I went into this day treatment, and this lady was there. And I was hearing all this inner child stuff and da da da. And I was going out there and I was petrified. We're going there from 9 to 3, and I'd get on the bus and it was March and it was quite hot. And I had a big puffer jacket onto ear and a baseball cap because I can't look at anyone and I don't want you to look at me. Everyone's walking around in t-shirts and I'm in a puffer jacket, but I don't want you to look at me. Do you know what I mean? Draw attention. And I just wanted to stop drinking. I wanted the consequences to stop. That's what I wanted. And what I started doing, because I started getting that fear, that impending feeling of doom again, I started puffing, because puff ain't really my problem. Then the puff stops working, so I move on to skunk. And then before I know it, I'm back in a bar and I'm ordering a drink and I'm sitting down with a group of builders who I've never met before in my life, and I'm going to the Napier Arms with them, which was a pickup pub, and I'm going to pick up a gram of gear. I went outside for a fag, and in that God stepped in, and I got on my phone and I called her. She came and got me. She took me home. She sobered me up. She went and picked my son up. She looked after us. Next day she got me back in a meeting. See, I'm the type, when I was sitting in AA, right, and God bless them people, and it's nothing against any fellowship. I'll go to any fellowship where there's a solution. I'm not about all that, you know, if you've got an N or you've got a C or you've got an A, whatever. If I'm somewhere and there's no other meeting, I will go where there's a meeting. And the things was on the wall and all that, but I just weren't hearing anything. I just wasn't hearing anything. And people talked about sponsorship and all of that, and I was like, but I've kind of found a little tribe of people that I quite like, and I loved war stories, loved them, love a bit of drama, but no real understanding or foundation of, Nick, you need to get on this, mate, because even though you're not doing that, you're still dying, you're still killing yourself. And I think someone said it the other day about, they asked someone, I think it was Kieran, asked someone to be a sponsor, and I had that experience. I walked into this massive meeting and asked this woman, she'd been around a long time, to be my sponsor, and she went, no, I'm sorry, I can't. Oh, and I walked away and I was like, right, fuck them all, I ain't asking no one else. I think they're all supposed to be a fellowship of, like, looking after you and da-da-da. And you know what? So what I did for a very, very long time, turned up to meetings and I sat at the back and I drank loads of coffee and I ate loads of biscuits and I did nothing. I did nothing. But my head went, well, you ain't drinking and using. You ain't drinking and using. And what I've come to understand over time is that is not enough. That is not enough because I still carry me about. My nutty head, my... my nutty head, all my defects, all of that, I still carry that about. And for me, what happened was when I took a drink of alcohol or a sniff of gear or whatever, all of that kind of stuff just chilled out. And I was in the rooms for a long time, and I'm a picker. I'll pick what steps I'm doing. And at the beginning of the book, right, it talks about how many hundreds of men and women have recovered, right? So by the time I've come in, you are talking thousands and thousands. And, you know, a lot of people. But I still believe I can do it my way, how I want to do it. So I know that I'm powerless. And you know, my life's unmanageable because I'm a bit chaotic. But I don't really understand about the unmanageability and what it really is about. You know, on page 52, on page 18, all of that stuff. I don't understand that, what it's about. And I don't know about your God stuff, mate. I'm not sure about that. If I have to. You know, that kind of stuff. And I did not have the capacity to be honest, was my main problem. So when I went in to go and do a... I'd met a few people and I had to have a fella sponsor because they'd understand me so much more than a woman, because a woman wouldn't get the stuff that I'd done. And all of these... You know, you talk about the belief systems and all of that and all of this that's going on up here. All the stuff that I think I know. And I went to this... I went to this fella and I come away and I was still feeling shit. And I bounced around like that for a very, very long time. And my experience of being in the rooms and seeing people light up who are doing the deal, while you're sitting there looking down on them, they're doing it, but I'm looking down on them and judging them. I don't believe them. I bet they don't behave like that at home. And I think, you know, and I know that he nicks a few quid here and there, and I know that he's doing this, and I know she's seeing him behind her husband's back, and all of that, feeding it. And the problem still lied within me, but I'm still looking for it in other people, someone to blame. I love the blame game. I love to be the victim, because if you had my life, you'd do what I did and all of that. And it was pitiful. It was pitiful. And I didn't come into... Do you know, I was thinking about this last night, because sometimes I forget how long I've actually been in CA. And I got into another relationship, because that was going to work, and I was getting him out of rehab, so he's much worse than me. So that'll be the fixer. That'll be the fixer. So what I'd done, and I'd known him for a lot of years previous, and I hated him. I couldn't stand him. Didn't like nothing about him, didn't like anything he had to say, I didn't think he was funny and all of that. And I went to a meeting, and he was outside the door, and I went, oh, you look really well. And he went, yeah, I'm just going into second stage housing around the corner. And I was like, oh, nice. And it was just before Christmas. Anyway, see him at a couple more meetings, and we had coffee and all that, and he was saying about, you know, because he's not like in touch with his family and all that. And I went, come to my mum's for Christmas dinner, right? So my mum's like, yeah, that's fine, you know. Anyway, you come, because... That's Christmas Day. By the 1st of January, I'm going and telling Packy's gear, come and move in with me and we'll be all right. We'll be all right together. And I called him as I was outside the rehab, didn't I? And I went, it's Nicky, I'm coming to get ya. Get your stuff. And he comes out with his black bags and off we go, and we're going to have a lovely life. And and do you know what? I really thought, you know what? Well, I'm not using and drinking. You know, I'm doing bits and pieces, and it's okay. It's okay. I'm not really causing any harm to anyone. And my behaviours are as bad, right? Untreated as in active alcoholism. When I'm on it, or whether I'm not on it, it's both as bad. I still have that stuff that runs through me, but I think it's the drink that makes me worse, or it's the gear that makes me worse, or it's all of that. No understanding of anything. But my pride and ego is so massive, I won't ask anyone either. So anyway, he moves in. We have this beautiful. I got pregnant, we lost a child, and then I got pregnant very quickly after, and I had this baby, and it all felt wrong. It all felt wrong. In my gut, my spirit, I felt so empty. My boy was doing all right, he weren't self-harming anymore. I had this beautiful baby, I had a flat, you know, like the external. And I'm thinking, this is supposed to be happening now, Nick. And it weren't. And I went to a meeting, now my daughter's 9, and I think she was 6 months old, so it shows you. And I went to my first, someone went to me, come to a CA meeting, Nick, just come. And I went, and I walked in the doors, and it wasn't the experience that I'd had with AA. As the people walking up and wanting to cuddle you and all that, and I'm like, don't fucking come near me, I'm not new. Don't touch me. I've got all of that. I've got all that wall going on. Because I don't know nothing about vulnerability. You know what I mean? Or getting honest. I've still got staunch Nikki from Acne. She's still there. The girl that kept me safe for so long. So long. Detrimental to, unbelievably, but she kept me safe. She kept me running. And you know what, I walked in that room and there was a fella there and Matt talked about him on Friday. And God bless him, he's still my friend today, John Brown, and I love him like a brother. And he went, Nick, we can help you. We can really help you, mate. And I fell on my knees and I went, please, John, please, just I will do anything. And he sent me down to this woman, 30 miles away, whatever it was, and I went down there and I went through the steps within 2 days, right? And I come out and I felt like my head was going to explode. Because people had talked about, when they'd gone through the work about, you start to feel a shift. And I just felt like I'd been smashed to pieces. But what happened was, when I went into that woman, I still had that thing. Don't tell her that. Mm. Don't tell her that. Keep that bit back. They don't need to know. I've still got that. And Mike talks about conceding and surrender, and I really, really know today what the difference is, and it was just that, you know, and being compliant, be compliant, do it, and that kind of held me for a little while. It held me, and I found a lovely lady sponsor, right, and she became my friend. I love her. She's gone out again and she's come back in, and I met her the other week for lunch, and I love her, and she sat down and she took some time with me, and I think what happened was it became so much more of a friendship than a sharing of the work. It became a bit blurred, do you know what I mean? And it was a December, and it was 3 weeks before Christmas, and her sister-in-law at 30-odd years of age dropped down dead of a brain hemorrhage. And then 2 weeks later, my friend dropped down dead of a cardiac arrest. And it felt like the world had just imploded. And she went, Nick, I can't do this with you right now. And I went, I can't do this with you right now either. We had so much grief and emotion and feeling for each other that it just weren't. And I got through Christmas, and you know what? I was going in meetings, and I was looking around, and I at that time I was like, why has God done this? Why has God done this to me? You know, I'm in that place, and sitting in meetings, and I'm looking around, and I think you're all talking shit anyway. None of you do it. None of you do it. And then I start dropping bits out. I start dropping bits out, and. I really do understand God's care, love and protection for me today, because in my darkest times, right, when I'm holding on like that, God is there and going to me, it's all right, but you need to do something as well. God puts up signs, warning signs, flashing lights, sirens, and I go, it's all right, I'll just turn this way. And God goes, you know what, Nick, I'm a gentleman, and I will step back, and you have your experience with it, but I will always be here. You know, that's been my experience, and then I start dropping bits out, and it starts to get really painful. And I'm working in a dishonest place with very dishonest people. I'm jumping out my car on the A12, wanting to fight men in vans, 5 of them, because you've cut in front of me and all of that. I'm doing one night stand things because I need validation from a fella, because that'll make me feel better. picking someone, phoning me at 3 o'clock in the morning, come and pick me up, and I'm running, picking them up, going home with them, leaving there 6 o'clock in the morning, feeling guilty, dirty, shame from the inside out, feeling rotten. All of that stuff starts creeping back in. Not a drink and drug in sight, just my behaviours, my feelings and my thinking. And it's all right, Nick, because you ain't drinking and using. And this time, September 2014, 9.5 years in, Saturday night, my sister's gone away to Spain, so I'm looking after my nephew, I've got my son, and I've got my daughter. And something coming, my head goes, do you know what? Fuck all this. Go and buy a drink, go and buy a gram of gear, and then get your car and drive it as hard and fast as you can into a central reservation and end this right here, right now. We're done. We're done. And I went to pick my car keys up, and my phone rang. And it was a girl who's a friend of my sister. She's not even really friends with me. And she went, Nick, I've been out for 3 days, and I'm smashed to pieces, mate. Smashed to pieces. She'd been beaten up, but she's smashed. And I say this, and you know what, and I don't make apologies for this for people who have heard me before. I used to apologise when I look around and I think, oh, I've earned it 15 times. It's my experience and it's my truth, and that's all I've got today. That is all I've got today. And it was like God stood in the doorway of my front room and he went, not for you, missus. And I picked up the phone and I called a fella. And I'd seen Matt about and I'd heard him, but I didn't really know him. Didn't really know him. We'd said hello and all of that and all, you know, the niceties that we do. And I picked up a fella and I went, Dave, please get me Matt's number. I'm going to die. And he went, all right, mate. And he got me Matt's number and I called Matt. And Matt went, let me just have a word with someone. I'll call you tomorrow. You will be all right. You will be all right. And Matt called me the next day and he went, right, we're going to sit down. We're going to go through this from the title page, line by line, word by word. You will understand what you suffer with. When you understand what you suffer with, then you know when the solution has to come. And I phoned him. He gave me a bit of work, right? And he gave me the prayer and all of that. And you know, the work, why do you want to do the work and all of that? Like that, because, you know, you get them. Once you ask the questions to people, why do I want to do the work? A lot of them don't come back even answering the questions, so you know. All right. And he sent me the questions. And bang on the question. And then he said, right, we're going to get together and this is what we're going to do. And I phoned him crying. And I was still working, this was in the September, and I was still working in this dishonest place with some very dishonest people, but that's what they do. And it was all feeling very uncomfortable, and I phoned him and I went, this is too painful, I can't do it, Matt. And he went, just do the fucking work. Put the phone down. And I'm like, does he know who I am? Does he know that I'm dying here? And very, very, very slowly, started to go through the work to identify with my powerlessness as Bill's powerlessness. Do I think like Bill? Do I drink like Bill? Do I believe this can work for me? And you know what? Something inside here started to feel a little bit easier. And I had a very fixed idea about God, what he was, who he is, what he does. Because when I grew up, it was like, if you don't, you're burning hell's fire, you know, and all of that, and 12 stations and all that kind of stuff. And Matt went to me, no. You sit down, you spend some quiet time, you do your praying, and you ask what is God's vision for what you would have him be. And, what a mind-blowing experience, mate. What a mind-blowing experience. I remember he said to me once, he went, wants to sit in a room, right? No telly, no phone, just a pen and a pad. And I wanted to sit there for 3 hours. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I'm not very good at keeping still. And I sat on my bed, just the light on, and my pen and my pad. And those words did not come from me. I've still got the bit of paper that I wrote. I've still got the words that God gave to me. Harry's always been there for me. He's never left my side. I just had to have my own experiences with this before I was able to truly accept him deep down in here. I had a lot of rubble and crap to clear away for God's light to shine out. Do you know what I mean? It was so dark in me. I was so toxic. So toxic. And very, very slowly we started going through the process. And I'd had that book, right? The beautiful big blue book, right? I'd had that book on my shelf since I came in. And I remember someone give it to me. And he went, don't read the stories at the back. You need to read the first 164. So I went straight to the stories. And that book had been on my shelf for a very, very long time. And when you open it up, it was like light was beaming out of it, mate. The words in there that I was seeing. I'm not here to put myself down. I'm not going to deem myself as thick and all that. But there's some things that I like to think that I understand that I don't. So I did have to get a dictionary and all of that kind of stuff to have a very, very clear understanding of everything. And something happened. God intervened. My relationship with him started to grow. Matt was giving me more and more different work that was, some of it for me was really uncomfortable and quite painful, right? But if I, you know, it's that thing, if I don't, how can I change what I don't know? So I had to start being able to recognise that stuff. And Matt shared it on Friday, when he spoke to his boys, you know. And the first time I asked my son, who's here, to sit down and tell me how I'm selfish and how I run on self-will and all that, he wouldn't do it with me. Mm-hmm. He said, no, Mum, that part of our life's done. It's done. And I don't want to go back now. I don't want to upset you. And when I've gone back through this time, he sat with me, and I was just saying to the girls out there, I'd said, I would really like for you to sit down and do some stuff with me so I can do some more work on myself, so I can improve our relationship. And he went, yeah. And it was a Friday night, and Gogglebox was on, right? 9 o'clock. And I've just sat down, and he come in, and he went, switch that off then, we're going to do this. And I was like, oh, really? And he sat down with me, my son, right? And I've had many, many enlightening moments, many, many, many learnings internally, not up here. And some of the stuff that come out from him was, which I'd started to do some work on with Matt anyway, was the fact that my boy has always come second. Nah, that hurts me. I don't go into guilt and shame about that stuff because it was what it was, unfortunately, you know. And it always comes second. He said, always came second to a drink or a drug or a fella. He went, then you went into recovery. He went, and then I came second to that. And then I came second when Lila's dad came along. And then I came second to Lila. And I always feel like I'm coming second. And I've had to do some work on that, and you know what, and for me it's about me making the approach to him, asking him, does he want to go for dinner, does he want to sit and watch a film, and all of that, just trying to have some time, does he want to talk, and what I have to understand today is it's okay for him to reject me, it's not okay for me to reject him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to be what he needs me to be, and I really, really would like to think that whatever saying stays in this room, you know, my son's had some difficult times himself. And I think Mike shared it last night, you know, sometimes you just got to hand them over to God and say, please do with him what is your will. And there's been times at 3 o'clock in the morning when I feel like my heart is breaking because something else has happened with him. And I've had to sit and I've had to say, what do I do? And God says to me, you just be. You just be. He has to have his experience. He has to have his experience. And I'm very aware now today, you know, it talks about, in the book, about no human power. And my mum couldn't save me. My dad couldn't save me. My son, my sister, my friends. No human power. And I'm very aware of that with him. No human power. He has to have his own experience. And our relationship in these 7 days has changed. So much has changed in 7 days of me being here. So much. And I so know God's with me, because prior to me coming here, I ain't been on a plane for 7 years, right? Because I'm so neurotically petrified of flying. And the last time we went away was 7 years ago. So I think so. He would have been 12, whatever Lila was, 2. We only went to Ibiza. I cried all the way there and I cried all the way home. And we got to the airport and they went to me, "Are you all right?" And I went, "God's with me. Mm-hmm. I'll be all right. It's not in my control. Mind my own business," because I told myself the pilot would have had a row with his wife the night before. He's been on it. They're going to crash the plane. And someone went to me, they got a co-pilot. I went, "Yeah, but they would have been on it together." So it's not going to help. And I can't say that I loved it. I can't say it's saying that I'm going to be rushing to do a lot. But you know what? I was okay. I was okay. And I got it. And I landed. And on Monday, Paul was already here. But what I did is I just spent a day kind of with me and the kids, just trying to centre myself and just readjust myself and just have a bit of quiet time. And then Tuesday, we've all been together, and then more of us have come out. And this is God-given, mate. This is God-given. From where I come from to where I am today, it talks about in your wildest dreams, yeah? I couldn't have pictured this. I couldn't have pictured this. I remember when I read that bit in the book, you know, life beyond your wildest dreams, I thought, that's it. Old man with loads of money, big ass, the kids are all going to behave. I'm going to have a dog, I'm going to have chickens, it's all going to be all of that. And you know what? Life beyond my wildest dreams today, right, is no feeling of impending doom.
Yeah.
I didn't get up this morning and want to die. I didn't get up this morning and want to use. I didn't get up this morning and want to abuse somebody. I didn't get up this morning and want to abuse myself. I got up this morning, I went in the bathroom, I hit my knees, done my own awakenings, I centered myself. Some of you may know that I had a bit of a meltdown yesterday. I lost the plot yesterday. I proper lost the plot. I was crying, "Oh, I don't want to be here, I need to go home, I can't do this," and all of that. I was sobbing. And people look, but as it's coming out of my mouth, I'm thinking, have you heard yourself? And then I went off, I had the chat with Fee and all that, and the circle of people that I've got around me, and I went off in the bathroom, and I had a little 10 minutes, and God comes in and goes, what makes you think this is about you? Why is your head so far up your ass that you think that you have the capacity to influence anybody? Mind you, if it's left down to you, people will be in trouble. So thankfully God does step in for me. He does step in for me. As I say, I've got both my children here. We haven't had a family holiday for a very long time. We haven't had no proper together time. I've watched my son and daughter's relationship this week change and blossom. It'll probably change tomorrow on the flight back home. But we have faith. And you know what? And just to kind of be with my fellows and to be surrounded by people who get it. Mm. Get, you know, when I've got that stuff that comes up that I'm allowed to be, you know, like yesterday I cried at breakfast table. I really, really cried, and I shared it with T and all that yesterday, and there had been a time I'd be sitting there like that, because I need to hold it in, because I can't have people see me cry. And you know what? Vulnerability, right, is powerful. It is powerful. Transparency is powerful. Being accountable is powerful. All of that stuff, you know what? I've been in, what is it, 12 and a half years, yeah? 12 and a half years. And my first 9 and a half, I wouldn't give you 8 and 4. It got me to a point, right? It got me to a point where it's painful. My last 3 have been absolutely amazing. I've learnt things about myself that I really, really didn't know. I've softened a lot. because I was very, very opinionated, banging the table and all that, and then because I need you to do it my way. It's none of my business. I've learned empathy from other people. I've learned when to step back. I've learned to stand my own oop, because I like to get in other people's oop and start minding their business for them. And having an opinion and a view on what they need to do with their life and their relationship. I'm just going to share on this, right, is I hadn't had a relationship for about 6.5 years, yeah, and then because I don't do them very well, and I got into one, and what I came to find and what I came to realise, and I was very, very lucky, blessed, that I had Paul, Matt, Keir, Fee, saying to me, this, you need to jog this on, mate, this is not good for you, and but I really believed in it. Well, it's been a long time now, I'll be alright, and I can go in, and I have an expectation of him to be a certain way, and I held on to this relationship, right, like hanging on to barbed wire attached to a freight train. I held on to him like I held on to drink and drugs, because you will be the one. I'm 40 odd now, I'm knocking on, I'm running out of time here, you need to be the one. And this went on for a year, didn't it? Oh my gosh, it was so bad. I'm phoning Keir, and he's, hang on, I've got to get out of the digger. I'm on the phone, crying to Keir, going, and he's like, Nick, he will be what he'll be, and he'll do what he'll do, mate, just stop. And I'm like, no, I can't. And then I was speaking to Fee, and she went, where's God in it, Nick? Yeah. It's all about you again, isn't it? And it was. And we went to a convention, Unity Day, whatever it was, and Camden, wasn't it? And we're sitting in the Unity Day, and the girl was on the stage, and she was talking about holding on to relationships and all of that. And what kept coming in my head was when Mike would say, I like to get every last drop out of it. You know, that ringing, I will hold on till the last drop. And sitting in this convention, and I was listening to this girl, and she's like, yeah, and I'm hanging on. And it is that thing of, my head says, hang on, and my spirit saying, this is not right. And it is that thing, like God showing me neon signs, there's sirens, there's all of this, not this one. And I'm going, yes, this one. And in the midst of the convention, I felt, I was listening to the girl, don't get me wrong, I was listening to the girl, and God went, go and address this. And I walked out of the meeting, and I went and made a phone call to the fair, and I went, we need to have a chat. And I said, listen, this ain't about you breaking my heart. I'm breaking my own heart. And it's not fair. It's not fair for me to expect you to be someone who you can't be. You're emotionally anorexic, and I'm a feeder. So because you're not giving me enough, I'm making up for enough for the both of us, because I want you to be. And I'm smothering him because I'm full of codependency, and I want validation from someone from the opposite sex to make me feel better. And what came in after that conversation, we sat down, we had a conversation, and we ended it. And when I did my quiet time that night, it come in, your validation, your worth does not come from people, it comes from me. That's where it comes from. And I really believe that today. You know, I really, really believe that today. I was blessed enough the other week. I did the Women's Unity Day, and I did say at that time, as I come towards the end, and it wasn't being cocky, because I can be very self-conscious, but I know the dangers of cocky. Mm-hmm. I'm not cocky and I'm not arrogant. I'm not today. I used to be, even up to 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, Matt stepped in and smashed that out of me. But I was at the Women's Day, and I said, you know what? Like, the beautiful thing is for me today, and it's not to be rude, I don't care what any of you think of me. I don't. I do what I do because it works for me. I don't care if you do it swinging from chandeliers, how you do it. If it works for you, do it. I have a way that works for me, that not only keeps me clean and keeps me sober, keeps me sane, keeps me in the middle of the triangle, keeps me accountable, keeps me transparent. I'm able to be a mum today. I'm able to be a mum today to that boy who at times is so broken. And I want to fix him. I want to wrap him up and I want to fix him. And God steps in and says, sometimes you have to do nothing. You have to do nothing, you know? And I'm not here to fix anybody. I'm here as a woman in recovery to share with other women what was freely shared with me, which didn't change my life, because my life, I didn't have a life sitting in the rooms, no emotional sobriety, you know? Sobriety is so much more than putting down. There's so much more on offer here. So much more, and you can have the old lot. And Mike talked about last night, you know, like the crumbs and the kibbles. And Fiona says, I want to go all inclusive. I don't want half bald. And you don't have to have that. You don't have to have that. This is limitless. It is limitless. It goes on. And it's a gift that keeps giving. It's blessed my life in so many ways. Coming in and falling to my knees and saying, do you know what? Please help me, I'm fucked. Because where I come from, you don't do that. You don't do that. You hold it down and you hold it together and you sort it out yourself. There's no strength in me. That strength comes in we. When we're all together. We're all together. There is a solution here. You can get from out under. You can. You don't have to stay in that place. Anything that happens to me today that is kind of detrimental and a bit off key, troubles of my own making. Troubles of my own making. Because I put myself in a position to be hurt. And my fellows retaliate. All of that. But I want to blame. And I've been shown I don't need to do that today, Nick. You take responsibility for yourself today. You take responsibility for your recovery. Matt showed me something that I just couldn't believe it, you know, when he shared the work with me and all of that. And I thank Mike for giving it to Paul, and I thank Paul for giving it to Matt and then passing it on, because I wouldn't be able to be a mum today. I wouldn't have been sitting here today. I wouldn't have none of you. I've got amazing people in my life. Amazing. Nothing happens by accident. That lady here, right, when we met like 14 odd years ago and we parted ways and then we come back together. She was already working with Matt when we come back together, and we hadn't seen each other for a long time, and she started working with Matt, and then I think Matt spoke to her about working with me, and she was like, he's my sponsor. you can't have him. And the relationship that we had 14 years ago, that we grew, and then it kind of diminished and went off, has grown again so organically. She is one of the most beautiful women I am blessed to have in my life, along with my little circle of fellows who kind of rein me in and give me a male's perspective, because I can be a bit warped on what I think men are. And they rein me in and they show me a new way, and I say, no, that's not how it has to be. It's just about getting up on a daily basis, doing what I need to do, doing what I was shown, being present, turning up. You know, we talked about the other day when you're asked to be a service. I didn't think about the flight. I just went, yeah, I'll be a service. Then thought about the flight after. And I was like, how do you do that then? How do I get to my bed? I've got a boat that goes there. Whether it's Brighton, whether it's Luton, whether it's Bournemouth, where exactly, whether it's Marbella, wherever it is, when I'm asked to go, I go. Because you know what? When I turned up a meeting or a convention or a unity day, there was someone else there doing it. Yeah. Giving their time freely. This has been the most amazing gift of my life. And that's, I love my kids, don't get me wrong, but above my kids, because if I don't have that gift, then I don't have my kids. If I haven't got God, if I haven't got my tribe, like Paul said, I'm out in the wilderness again. And I don't want to be there for all the money in the world. I thank you for the honour and the privilege of allowing me to speak. I thank every single one of you for being there.
Thank you.